the school today, she said. Oh, yeah? Who was it? Vid kept sweeping. From my dancing days, said Tiffany. Vid looked up. Is that right, huh? One of my regulars, said Tiffany. Sort of a friend, really. A nice guy. Good tipper? Asked Vid. Great tipper, said Tiffany. Excellent, said Vid. He booked a lot of private shows, said Tiffany carefully. Good for him, said Vid. The man had great taste. He studied the floor carefully and continued sweeping up the tiny fragments of glass. Vid, said Tiffany, come on. It's a bit uncomfortable, isn't it? Standing on the netball courts next to a guy who saw your wife strip. Why should I be uncomfortable? He looked up at her from the floor. I'm proud of you. I probably wouldn't want to see his wife strip. Did you sleep with him? I never slept with any of them, said Tiffany. You know that. Vid studied her thoughtfully. Well then, so what is the big deal? He finally said. You weren't a hooker. But it's a prestigious private school. To some of those women, there's probably not much difference between a dancer and a hooker. If word gets out, if he tells his wife... He's not going to tell his wife, said Vid. He stood up and moved to another corner of the floor where the nuts had rolled. He might tell his wife, and then all the girls will find out, and Dakota will get bullied, and that will lead to depression, and that will lead to drug addiction. That's drug ice. Now, that's a terrible drug, said Vid. Let's tell her to stick to the nice drugs, the ones that make you feel mellow, not like you want to claw off your skin. Vid, he's not going to tell his wife, said Vid. I would bet you $1 million he doesn't tell his wife. And so what if he does? All the girls will say is... Oh, Dakota, you're so lucky. Your mom is very talented, very beautiful, very flexible. Vid, you did nothing wrong. Did you rob a bank? No, you did not. And if this thing you're worried about happens, and it won't happen, but if it does happen that Dakota is unhappy, we pull her out of that school. Easy. We send her somewhere else. Come on now. Not every man in Sydney saw you dance. We'll find another school where no one knows you. Things aren't that simple, said Tiffany. They are, if we want them to be, said Vid. He swept up the final shards of glass and stood. You're getting yourself all worked up over nothing. You're finding catastrophes. It's like with grumpy old Harry next door. That's not nothing, said Tiffany. Our next door neighbor dies and we didn't even know. That's not nothing. Vid shrugged. Okay, so what did Dakota say in the car today? We feel regret. Yes. We do. Sure, we do. We feel regret over Harry. We should have visited him more, even when he slammed the door in our face. And if you want, you can feel regret over your dancing, even though you were good at it and you liked it and you didn't hurt anyone and you made a lot of money, you know? So I think good for you, but okay, if you want, you feel regret. Just like we feel regret over little Ruby. You know, of course we do. We all feel terrible. We all wish that things had been different. We wish that very much. I wish I'd never invited those people in the first place. And I wish I'd kept a better eye on those little girls so that every time I walk into my own backyard, I don't have to remember. He stopped. His mouth worked as if he were chewing on a tough piece of steak. I'll never forget her little white face, said Vid finally. He'd got control of his voice, but his eyes were very bright. He held the little blue dustpan full of chocolate nuts and glass tightly in his hand. Her blue lips. The whole time I was calling the ambulance, I was thinking to myself, it's too late. It's too late. She's gone. He turned away, and Tiffany closed her eyes briefly. A speeding ticket had arrived last week, and she'd recognized the date immediately. A camera must have picked her up going over the limit when she'd driven Clementine to the hospital. She would never forget that drive. It was like a nightmare that stayed with you forever. She and Clementine had experienced that together. It was not right that Tiffany and her family be cut cleanly from Clementine's life. She thought of Dakota and how she'd buried her groundless remorse so deep she'd become an eerie ghost of herself. Right, she said. She felt suddenly very, very angry. Where are the keys? We're going out. Chapter 55. The Day of the Barbecue. Tiffany registered the sudden eerie whisper quietness of her neighbourhood. The police and the paramedics and the helicopter had all left. Sunday night in the suburbs. Time for homework and ironing and 60 minutes. It was dark now. The streetlights were on. They stood in the front yard. Tiffany was about to drive Clementine to the hospital. She had her car keys ready in the palm of her hand. Only one parent had been allowed to go in the helicopter with Ruby, and Sam had gone, which meant Clementine had to get to the hospital on her own. I'll drive myself, said Clementine now. She must have been running fingers through her hair because it stood out in a mad halo around her head, like she'd had an electric shock. No, you won't. You're probably over the limit anyway, said Tiffany. Haven't you been drinking? Said Clementine. I only had one light beer, said Tiffany. Oh, said Clementine. She chewed her lip, and Tiffany saw that she'd drawn blood. Right. The plan was for Oliver and Erica to take care of Holly. Well, just Oliver, really, because Erica was clearly not quite right, although she'd finally stopped shaking. I'll get these two ladies onto the couch with a DVD and some popcorn, said Oliver. The poor man was still in wet clothes himself. Clementine suddenly threw her arms so violently around Oliver, she nearly knocked him off balance. I haven't even said thank you, she said into his chest. I haven't even thanked you both. Her voice was so full of raw emotion, it was almost painful to hear. She reached an arm out to Erica to hug her too, but Erica stepped away. Fix your hair, Clementine, she said. She smoothed down the strands of hair around Clementine's face with both hands. You'll scare Ruby. You look like a witch. Thanks, said Clementine with a shaky breath. Right. She bent down to Holly's height. You be a good girl for Erica and Oliver, okay? And, you might get to stay with Grandma tonight. Hooray! Said Holly. She stopped. And Ruby, too? I think it will be just you tonight, Holly, said Clementine. She looked up at the sky where the helicopter had just disappeared and pulled her cardigan tighter around her. Holly stared up at her mother, and her lower lip trembled. Let's go, Holly, said Oliver, taking her hand. He looked at Tiffany. Thank you for your hospitality, Tiffany. Vid. Vid slapped him on the shoulder. Mate. Oliver hurried Holly off down the driveway, telling her about the movie they were about to see. You'll call us? Erica put her hand on Clementine's arm, and Tiffany could see that this was her version of a hug. Her sister Karen was exactly the same. I can't believe she's in that helicopter right now. Clementine stared at the sky. I should have been the one to go with her, not Sam. I don't know why I let him go. What if... Snap out of it, said Erica. Who cares who went in the helicopter? She's sedated. She won't even remember it. Off you go. Do I need to slap you across the face? What? Clementine blinked. No? So, call us, okay? Said Erica. Of course I'll call you, said Clementine snippily. They really were like sisters. As Erica followed Oliver and Holly down the driveway, in bare feet, her wet shoes in her hand, Vid came from inside with Tiffany's wallet, followed by Dakota. Well, so, we hope little Ruby is all good, back to her little monkey self in no time. I'm sure she will be, said Vid to Clementine. You have private health coverage, right? Tell them you want the best doctors, no trainees. Poor Vid. He didn't shine at times like these. Tiffany could see the tension in his shoulders, as if he was squaring up for a fight. It was like his entire body resisted negative emotion. Clementine studied Vid. Her face twisted with some unreadable emotion. Yes, she said formally. Thank you. She looked at Tiffany. Can we? Of course, said Tiffany. She pointed the remote on her keyring at the garage door to open it. And as she did, she saw Dakota bravely open her mouth and start to say something to Clementine. But Clementine walked straight past Dakota, her eyes on the car, clearly desperate to get to the hospital as fast as she could. Chapter 56. I'm just going to pop over next door for a moment, said Erica to Oliver when she got home. My psychologist thinks the best way to get my memory back is to return to the scene of the crime, so to speak. There was no crime, said Oliver thickly. He was up and dressed and sucking on a cough lolly. It's a figure of speech, said Erica. That's why I said, so to speak. I don't think Vid and Tiffany are home at the moment, said Oliver. I saw their car leave as you were coming in. I know. I saw it too. I'd actually rather go over when they're not there, said Erica. Less distracting. What? You can't go over while they're not home, said Oliver. That's trespassing. Oh, for heaven's sake, Vid and Tiffany wouldn't care, said Erica. I'd just explain what I was doing. It would be awkward, but it would be worth it. She wanted to get some return on the money she'd invested in NotPat's session. And it's raining, pointed out Oliver. Now he was crunching the cough lolly between his teeth. There's no point going over in the rain. It wasn't raining that day. He suddenly swallowed the lolly in one gulp and gave her a hard look. You're not going to remember anything by standing in their backyard. You are drunk, that's all. I've told you before. Drunk people forget stuff. It's perfectly normal. And I've told you before, I got drunk because of the medication, said Erica. Don't take your childhood issues out on me. It's not relevant how or why you got drunk. I'm just saying, said Oliver. It's not going to help. Come on, it's a crazy idea. Stay here. Tell me about your mother's place. How bad was it? This won't take a minute, said Erica as she walked to the front door. I'll be back in a moment. I'll tell you about Mum then. I've made chicken curry for dinner. Oliver kept talking as he walked behind her. He held the door as she opened it. I started to feel a bit better this afternoon, and I wasn't sure if we had any coconut milk, but we did. Oh, and I nearly forgot, the police came today. About Harry. They're having trouble finding hold all those thoughts. Erica picked up her umbrella. Oliver wasn't normally so loquacious, but a sick day at home alone always left him banked up with conversation. Also, she had a feeling those cold and flu tablets he took made him a little hyper. Not that she would ever tell him that, due to his horror of ever being affected by drugs and alcohol. It was cute how chatty he got. She hurried out in the rain, over the front yard, and up Vid and Tiffany's driveway. She rang the doorbell first, for form's sake, just in case someone was home or someone somewhere was secretly observing her, although the only neighbour who could possibly have done that was Harry, and he was dead. She waited a good minute, and then she headed around into the backyard. As she went down the path at the side of the house, security lights switched on automatically, turning the rain to gold. She hoped she wouldn't trip some alarm. All the fairy lights in the backyard were on, and she remembered how Tiffany had said they were on some sort of automatic timer. Just the sight of the fairy lights created a deluge of sensory memory from that afternoon. She could smell Vid's caramelized onions that Clementine had fussed over. She could feel the way the ground had gently rocked beneath her feet. The woolly sensation in her head. This was working. Not Pat was a genius, worth every cent. Don't get distracted, she reminded herself. Focus, except don't focus too much. Relax and remember. She had walked down this footpath from the back door. She was carrying the blue and white plates. She was looking at the plates. She liked the plates. She coveted the plates. My God, she hadn't taken the plates, had she? No, she dropped the plates. She remembered that. The music. There was music, and beneath the music, or above the music, there was a sound, an urgent sound, and the sound was related in some way to Harry. Oh, why did she keep coming back to Harry? What did that mean? Just because of his phone call earlier about turning down the music? She walked a little farther down the footpath. She couldn't see the fountain from here. She needed to see the fountain. Her heart thudded in rhythm with the rain pelleting her umbrella. She stopped, confused. Where was the fountain? She turned to the left. She turned to the right. She let the umbrella fall back behind her head and squinted through the rain. The fountain was gone. There was nothing but an ugly slab of empty concrete where it had once stood. And Erica's memories were dissolving, disappearing, being washed away like a chalk drawing on pavement in the rain. And all she felt right now was cold and wet and foolish. Chapter 57. Clementine followed Sam into their bedroom, where he pulled a t-shirt from a drawer and shrugged it on. He took off his work pants and pulled on a pair of jeans. His movements were jerky, like a twitchy junkie in need of a fix. He avoided meeting her eye. She said, "Do you mean it? Are you serious? About separating?" "Probably not," he said with a lift of his shoulders, as if the state of their marriage was neither here nor there to him. She was so agitated she couldn't sort out her breathing. It was like she couldn't remember the process. She kept holding her breath and then taking sudden gasps of air. She said, "For God's sake, you can't just say things like that. You've never... we've never..." She meant that they'd never used words like separation and divorce, even in their worst screaming matches. They yelled things like, "You're infuriating. You don't think. You are the most annoying woman in the history of annoying women. I hate you. I hate you more." And they always, always used the word always, even though Clementine's mother had said you should never use that word in an argument with your spouse, as in, for example, "You always forget to refill the water jug." But Sam did always forget. It was accurate. But they'd never allowed for the possibility of their marriage ending. They could stomp and yell and sulk, safe in the knowledge that the scaffolding of their lives was rock solid. Paradoxically, it gave them permission to yell louder, to scream stupider, sillier, more irrational things, to just let their feelings swirl freely through them, because it was going to be fine in the morning. "Sorry," said Sam. "I shouldn't have said that." He looked at her, and an expression of pure exhaustion crossed his face. And for a moment, it was him again, not that cold, peculiar stranger. "I was just upset about the idea of Dakota coming to Holly's party. I don't want Holly having anything to do with that family." "They're not bad people," said Clementine, momentarily distracted from the point at hand by the loathing in Sam's tone. Clementine didn't want to see Vid and Tiffany because they were a reminder of the worst day of her life. Just thinking about them made her shudder, the way you shuddered at the thought of some food or drink in which you had overindulged until it made you sick. But she didn't loathe them. "Look, they're just not our type of people," said Sam. "To be frank, I don't want my child associating with people like them." "What? Because she used to be a dancer?" said Clementine. "She used to be a stripper," said Sam. With such disgust, it made Clementine feel instantly defensive on Tiffany's behalf. It would be too easy to put Tiffany into a particular box for a certain kind of person, and to decide that the powerful shot of desire Clementine had felt when Tiffany offered her a lap dance was merely a cheap trick of her body, an involuntary response, like using a vibrator. It would be easy to decide that Clementine's behaviour was disgusting, and Tiffany was disgusting, and what had happened was all just so disgusting. But that was a cop-out. That was like saying that what had happened to Ruby could never have happened if they'd been at a barbecue with the right sort of people. Of course it could still have happened if they'd been distracted by a conversation about philosophy or politics or prize-winning literature. "Tiffany is nice, really nice. They're nice people," she said. She thought about Vid and Tiffany and the warmth and friendliness they'd showed them that night. They were both so unabashedly themselves, There was no subterfuge, no obfuscation. They're kind of sweet people, really. Sweet? Exploded Sam. Are you out of your mind? You've got no idea what you're talking about. I've been to those strip clubs. Have you ever been to one? No, but so what? They're revolting, depressing places. They're not glamorous. They're not sexy. You've got no grip on reality. Seriously. It was just another version of the ongoing argument of their marriage. Sam had reality gripped. Apparently, Clementine did not. Sam wanted to get to the airport early. Clementine wanted to be the last one to board. Sam wanted to book ahead. Clementine wanted to wing it. It used to balance out. It used to be a joke. Seriously. She imitated his tone mockingly under her breath. Seriously, he said. No one wants to be there at those places. Not the girls, not the punters. Oh, right. No one wants to be there, repeated Clementine. The word punters irked her. Conservative old man word. Or was it just that everything about him irked her now? So I guess you and the other punters were just forced to go along. In most cases, it's a drunk group of blokes and someone says, let's do this for a lark, and you go along and it's funny, but then you see all those hard-faced women gyrating about and you realise it's seedy, it's disgusting. Yeah, that's right, Sam, because you seemed really disgusted by Tiffany that night, said Clementine. This was insane. This was historical revisionism at its best. And hadn't Sam always specialised in that? Hadn't she always said she wished she had a permanent film rolling of their life so she could go back and prove that, yes, he did so say that thing he now denied? You were laughing. You were encouraging her. You liked her. Don't pretend you didn't like her. I know you did. She regretted it as soon as she said it, because she knew him so well, she could see how her words flayed him. You're right, and that's what I have to live with, he said. I have to live with that forever, but it doesn't mean I want to socialise with her. You know she was probably a hooker, right? She wasn't. Dancing was just a job. It was just a fun job. How would you know? Said Sam. We talked about it when she drove me to the hospital. Sam stopped. So you had a fun chat about Tiffany's stripping days on the way to the hospital while Ruby... His voice cracked. He took a breath, and when he spoke again, he had regained control of his voice. How nice. How very innocent. The rage felt as powerful and unconsenting and extraordinary as a contraction. It took her a moment to catch her breath. He was questioning her love for Ruby. He was implying she'd somehow betrayed Ruby, that she didn't care, that her love was inferior to his. And in fact, now that she thought about it, hadn't that always been his implication? That he loved the children more than she did because he worried more, he hovered more? You have no idea what that drive to the hospital was like, she said carefully. She could hear the anger she was trying to contain rippling through her speech so that each word sounded offbeat. It was... the worst. Sam held up his hand like a stop sign. I have no interest in hearing about this. Clementine lifted both her own hands in frustration and then let them drop. Their relationship was becoming so twisted and tangled, it was like they were lost in the overgrown forest of a fairy tale. And she couldn't see how to hack their way back through to the place she knew was still there, the place where surely they still loved each other. Chapter 58, The Day of the Barbecue. Tiffany drove towards Westmead Children's Hospital as fast as she dared, while Clementine phoned her parents and in-laws. They were brief but terrible phone calls to hear. As soon as Clementine heard her mother's voice, she burst into tears. Tiffany could hear the poor woman shouting through the phone, "What is it? What happened? For the love of God, Clementine, stop crying and tell me." After the phone calls, they drove in silence, while Clementine sniffed noisily, her phone in her lap and her face turned toward the window. Finally, Tiffany spoke. "I'm so sorry," she began. "It's not your fault," said Clementine. "It's our fault. My fault." Tiffany was silent, her eyes on the road ahead. What if a little girl died because Tiffany still liked to be admired? Because she knew Vid liked it? Because she thought she was so freaking edgy? "I was distracting you," she said. She wanted it on the record before someone accused her. "I started it," said Clementine dully. She turned and looked out the window. "My child, my responsibility." Tiffany didn't know what to say. It wasn't like arguing over a dinner bill. "No, I insist. Let me take this one. I was watching both girls all afternoon," said Clementine. "I knew exactly where they both were all the time, except for then. Sam thinks I'm not as careful as him, but I was watching them. I was." "Of course you were. I know you were," said Tiffany. "She must have been so scared," said Clementine. "When the water..." Tiffany looked over and saw Clementine rocking, the seatbelt pulling tight against her chest, her fist pressed to her mouth. "She would have been swallowing all that water and panicking and..." Tiffany strained to make out the words as she pulled up at a traffic light. Clementine bent forward and rested her arms against the dashboard as if she were in the brace position for an airplane accident. Then she sat back again and pressed her hands hard against her lower abdomen and moaned, making Tiffany think of a woman in labour. "Deep breaths," said Tiffany. "In through the nose, out the mouth. Make a whoosh sound, like this." Clementine obeyed. "I do yoga sometimes," said Tiffany. Distract her, that's all she could do. "Do you do yoga?"
"I keep meaning to," said Clementine.
"I took Vid once," said Tiffany. "It was the funniest thing I'd ever seen."
"What's that ahead?" said Clementine. "Please tell me that's not a traffic jam."
"I'm sure it's not," said Tiffany. She looked at the line of twinkling red brake lights in front of her, and her heart sank. "Not at this time of night. Surely not." Clementine couldn't believe what she was seeing. It was like the universe was playing with her, laughing at her, punishing her.
"You're kidding,"
she said as they pulled up behind a stopped car. She twisted around in her seat. There were cars pulling up behind them, one after another, all of them coming to a complete stop. The lane next to them came to a standstill too. They were trapped in a sea of metal. "If there's a side street coming up," Tiffany jabbed her finger at the car's built-in satellite navigator, "we could duck down and find a back way, but I can't seem to see."
"I should have gone with Ruby," said Clementine.
She and Sam hadn't even discussed it when the doctor had said only one parent could go in the helicopter. "I'll go," Sam had said, without even looking at Clementine.
Surely it was normally the mother who went. Children needed their mothers when they were sick. Just because Sam took the girls for their injections didn't give him first place in line during medical emergencies. They called out Mummy if they were sick in the night, and Clementine was the one who would go and sit and cuddle them while Sam went to measure out the medicine. Why had she just passively stood aside and let him go? She was the mother. Clementine should have gone. She loathed herself for not insisting. She loathed Sam for not giving her the option. Oh, God, she said out loud. Her stomach cramped violently. We're not moving at all. The brake lights on the car in front went off, and Tiffany hunched hopefully over the steering wheel. They inched forward and stopped immediately. From behind them, a car horn tooted, and another one responded with a furious, ludicrous scream. Oh, fuck it, moaned Clementine. Fuck it, fuck it, fuck it. She couldn't sit still. She plucked at the diagonal strap of her seatbelt. It felt like she was being physically restrained from seeing Ruby. The need to be there with her right now was overwhelming. She wanted to scream with it. She could feel her arms straining with the desire to hold her. She's in good hands, said Tiffany. My niece was in intensive care once at Westmead, and my sister said they were amazing. She was so impressed and... She fell silent. Clementine looked out the window and then opened it to let in some air. She imagined herself throwing open the door and running. No footpath. She'd just run along the highway, past all those stupid, horrible metal cars, screaming, "Get out of my way!" I'll see if we can find a traffic report. Tiffany switched on the radio. She pushed buttons, flicking past fragments of sound, before finally settling on what sounded like a news report. Come on! Said Tiffany to the radio. Finally, they heard it. A three-car pile-up, said Vince, the roving traffic reporter, cheerily from his viewpoint in a helicopter. Someone else in a helicopter. Traffic at a standstill. It's unbelievable. This is not your average Sunday evening. It looks like a peak-hour gridlock on a Monday morning. Tiffany switched off the radio. So that confirms we're in a traffic jam, she said. They sat in silence. The car in front of them moved and then stopped almost immediately. I can't. I have to. Clementine undid her seatbelt. The roof of the car was so close to her head. I have to get out of here. I can't just sit here. Well, there's nowhere to go. Tiffany looked panicky. We're moving. Look, we're moving. It will clear. Did you see how white she was? Said Clementine. Her face was so white. She normally has these pink little cheeks. She could feel her self-control slipping, like a foot sliding on gravel. She looked at Tiffany. Talk to me about something else. Anything else? Okay, said Tiffany. Clementine couldn't bear it. I've got an audition coming up, a very important audition. It was the biggest thing in my life this morning. Did you have to audition to be a dancer? She pressed her hands over her face and spoke through her fingers. What if she stops breathing again? I don't think she can stop breathing because she's intubated, said Tiffany, to help her breathe. The line of traffic moved again, stopped. Fuck this! Clementine slammed her closed fist on the dashboard. I did have to audition, said Tiffany quickly, for my job at the club. I went with my friend Erin, otherwise I might have chickened out. She stopped. Go on, said Clementine. Keep talking. Please, keep talking. So, we turned up at the club, and I thought we might have trouble taking it seriously, but there was this woman in charge of the auditions. Her name was Emerald Blaze. I know, it sounds comical, but honestly, she was formidable. As soon as we saw her, we took it dead seriously. She was an amazing dancer. She moved in slow motion. It made me think of silk. Slippery silk. Almost too sexy. Like you were seeing something you shouldn't see. She said, "Girls, it's not about fancy pole tricks. It's about the tease." That advice earned me a lot of money. So the first thing we had to do was just walk up on stage, walk around the pole, and walk off. It doesn't sound like much, but it was terrifying, knowing all the girls were watching and judging you, and of course, we weren't used to the high heels yet. I thought I was going to fall. And what else? I remember Emerald had this whole thing about not being yourself. You had to come up with a stage name and invent your own backstory. Should I stop? What? Clementine kneaded her stomach with her fists. The traffic inched forward. No, please don't stop. Keep talking. What was your stage name? Barbie. Kind of embarrassing. I used to love my Barbie dolls. Please keep talking, she said. And so Tiffany talked. She talked about the deep bass beat of the music and the haze of cigarette smoke and the drugs and the girls and the rules and how she got pretty good on the pole. She could do lots of spinning tricks and hold herself out perpendicular to the pole, although it hurt her shoulders afterwards. But she'd done gymnastics at a competitive level as a kid, so Clementine thought of Holly's gymnastic classes. Maybe it was time for her to learn the violin instead. The car inched forward. "Go on," she said. Tiffany went on. She talked about the one time she had to push the panic button doing a private show, but that was honestly the only time she didn't feel safe. And the barrister, who wanted to just sit there and tenderly hold her feet, and how she saw him a few weeks later being interviewed about a case on TV, and the scruffy-looking guy in a faded polo shirt who turned out to be mega rich and handed over stacks of tipping dollars, not like the bankers in expensive suits who teased you with a single token. It was worth $2, for God's sake. And the young country boys who kept on going back to the ATM for more cash and booking her again until finally she said, "Fellas, this is it. I've got nothing more to show you." And the B-grade celebrity who used to book her and Aaron for shower shows and say, "Bravo, bravo," as if he were at the opera. Or the symphony? Tiffany looked sideways at Clementine. "Shower shows?" said Clementine. "Yeah, so you'd have a shower while your customer sat on a couch and watched you loofer up or soap each other up if there were two of you. I liked the shower shows. The club got really hot and sticky. It was a relief to cool off." "Right," said Clementine. God almighty, shower shows. She wondered if she was going to be sick. There was a very good chance she was going to be sick. "Should I stop talking now?" said Tiffany. "No," said Clementine. She closed her eyes, saw Ruby, and opened them again. "Keep talking," she said in a louder voice. And so for the next 20 surreal minutes, while Clementine fixed her eyes on the brake lights of the car in front and willed them to vanish, Tiffany talked and talked, and the words flowed over Clementine, and she kept losing track, hearing only fragments. The podiums in the private rooms were really hard, so you carried this small fluffy rug. Some girls needed to drink to work, but I... competitive, This one night, I thought, to hell with it. Until finally they came to the traffic cones and the bright white flashing lights and a tow truck slowly lifting a small mangled red car up by its bumper bar at an unnatural angle and a policeman waving them on. And Tiffany said in a suddenly very different tone of voice, "Right then," and put her foot down hard on the accelerator. And neither of them said another word until they drove into the hospital car park. Chapter 59. So, did it work? Did you remember anything more? Said Oliver. They were sitting at the dining room table, eating the chicken curry he'd made. Outside, the rain eased to a drizzle, as if it were thinking about stopping. But Erica wasn't falling for that. There was nothing else on the polished expanse of mahogany except what they needed. Shining cutlery, placemats, unsmudged glasses of iced water on coasters. Sitting down to eat at a table like this was something neither of them ever took for granted. Before they ate, their eyes always met in brief acknowledgement, an unspoken moment of gratitude for space and order. "No," said Erica, "the fountain is gone. It's all concreted over. The backyard looks scarred. It was kind of sad." "I guess they didn't want the memory," said Oliver. "Whereas I did want the memory," said Erica. She carefully put down her knife and fork. "Stop waving your cutlery about," Pam used to tell Clementine and her brothers. Erica was the only one who listened. Clementine still liked to emphasize a point with her fork. "Yes," said Oliver. "I know. I've written it down, you know, everything I do and don't remember." In fact, she'd typed it up in a Word document, saved as memory doc, in the hope that treating it like a professional problem would bring about a professional solution. "Good idea," said Oliver. He was listening to her, but she could tell he was also listening to the gurgling sound of rainwater cascading from their overflowing gutters onto their back deck. He was worried about the timber starting to rot. "I remember coming out of the house, holding the plates," said Erica. Her memories were like the rapid flashes of a strobe light. On, off. On, off. "And then next thing, I'm in the fountain, and you're there, and together we're lifting up Ruby between us. But I can't remember anything in between. It's completely blank. I don't remember seeing Ruby or getting to the fountain. Suddenly, I'm just in there." "You dropped the plates and you ran," said Oliver. "You screamed for Clementine and then you ran. I saw you running." "Yes, but why can't I remember that?" said Erica. "Why can't I remember thinking, oh my God, Ruby is in the fountain? How could I forget that?" "The shock, the alcohol, the medication, all those things," said Oliver. "Honestly, I think you have to let it go." "Yes," sighed Erica. She picked up her cutlery again. "I know. You're right." She should tell him now that Clementine had agreed to be their egg donor. It was cruel to withhold information that would make him so happy. "How bad was your mother's place today?" asked Oliver. "The worst it's been in a while." "I'm sorry," said Oliver, "and I'm sorry you had to go on your own." "It's fine. I didn't do much. I kind of gave up. The bad news is that the woman next door is selling." "Okay," said Oliver, carefully chewing. "So that's a problem." She watched him weighing it all up. She was nice about it, said Erica. We'll just have to work with her, said Oliver. Find out exactly when she's listing. The open for inspection times. I feel like Mum might deliberately sabotage her, said Erica, just to be malicious.
Possibly, said Oliver.
He'd grown up with purposeless malice too, but he accepted it like the weather, whereas Erica still resisted it, resented it, tried to find meaning behind it. She thought of her mother's laugh when the rubbish bag had split. Why would she laugh? How was that funny?
We'll work it out, said Oliver. We forget about the inside and focus on the outside. That's all that matters until the neighbor sells.
He'd always been so gloriously calm when it came to the problem of Sylvia. When he realized how distressed Erica got whenever she visited her mother's house, which used to be a couple of times a week, he had initially insisted that she simply refuse to ever go there. But Erica's sense of responsibility for her mother couldn't let her do that. She needed to ensure her mother's living conditions hadn't become a fire or health hazard. So Oliver developed a plan, with a spreadsheet, of course, setting out a schedule of visits. The idea was that Erica would go to her mother's place only 6 times a year, together with Oliver, and each time they went, they would have at least 6 hours blocked out, and they would be armed and ready for battle, with gloves and masks and rubbish bags. There would be no more going over for dinner, as if Sylvia were a normal mother. What a sick joke those dinner invitations had always been. Sylvia would promise to make some meal from Erica's childhood. Long, long ago, before the kitchen disappeared, she'd been a good cook. But the meal had never, ever materialized. And yet each time, part of Erica had believed that it would happen, even though she knew perfectly well that Sylvia's kitchen was no longer usable. I was a little tired, Sylvia would say. Shall we just get takeaway? Those nights had always ended in a screaming match over the state of the house. Now, Erica no longer begged her mother to seek professional help. Oliver had helped her see that Sylvia was never going to change. She would never be cured. Oliver said to Erica, "You get professional help. You can't change her, but you can change how you react to her." So that's what she'd done. He would be the most wonderful, calm, wise father. She imagined him explaining the world to a son, a little boy with Ruby and Holly's startling blue eyes, sitting at the table with them, with his own placemat and his own glass of water. Their child would never have to eat a meal sitting on his or her bed because the dining room table had disappeared beneath piles of junk. Their child's friends could come over to play anytime, anytime, even for dinner. They would have extra placemats. That was the plan. That was the dream. To give a child the precious gift of an ordinary childhood. It was just that she could see Oliver in the dream so much more clearly than she could see herself. Tell him, she told herself. Just tell him. He deserves it. Clementine called again today, she said, a tiny white lie, while I was at Mum's place. Oliver lifted his head and she saw the hope, so naked and raw. It made her feel sick. She's happy to do it, she said. To donate her eggs. Let her do it. They'd saved Ruby's life. A life for a life. Clementine owed them. Let her do it. Oliver carefully put down his knife and fork on either side of his plate. His eyes were shining. Do you think, he began, are you worried she's offering for the wrong reasons? Because of Ruby? Erica shrugged. The movement of her shoulders felt unnatural. She wasn't going to tell him what she'd overheard. It would only upset him, and it shamed her. She didn't want Oliver to know that her closest friend didn't really care for her. She says it's nothing to do with that, but I guess we'll never really know, will we? Anyway, it's a fair exchange. We saved Ruby. She gives us a baby. Are you joking? Said Oliver. I don't know if I'm joking, said Erica reflectively. I might be serious. We did save Ruby's life. That's a fact. Why shouldn't they repay us by doing something in return? And what does it matter what her motivations are? Oliver considered. Yes, it matters, he said. Doesn't it? If she doesn't really feel comfortable with it, if she wouldn't have done it otherwise? Well, she has to see the counsellor at the clinic anyway, said Erica, before it all goes ahead. Surely it's up to the counsellor to talk to her about all that sort of thing. Her motivations, her psychological state. Oliver's brow cleared. There was a procedure to follow. Experts who would decide. You're right, he said happily. He picked up his cutlery. That's great news, amazing news, a step in the right direction. We'll get there. We'll be parents, one way or another. Yes, said Erica. Yes, we will. He put down his knife and fork again and wiped the side of his mouth. Can I ask you something that might sound strange? Erica stiffened. Sure. The day of the barbecue, Clementine said that you'd always told her you didn't want children. You're not just doing all of this for me, are you? His glasses slipped forward a fraction as he frowned. All that you've had to go through over the last few years. It hasn't been that bad, said Erica. IVF had been a well-ordered process. She appreciated the rigor of it, the rules and the science. She especially enjoyed the sterility, the gowns that went straight into a basket after you wore them only once, the booties you put on over your shoes, the blue paper hairnets. And it had been nice spending time with Oliver, working on this important secret project together. She remembered each retrieval and transfer, breathing in that beautiful antiseptic fragrance, holding Oliver's hand, nothing to do except submit to the process. Oliver had taken on the responsibility of all the medication. He had done all her injections, tenderly, professionally. Never left a single bruise. She didn't mind the early morning blood tests, the dizzy rush to the head. Yes, that is correct, that is my name, she'd say, as the nurse held up the neatly labelled test tube of blood in a blue-gloved hand for her to check. Clementine would hate those needles. Clementine's terror in return for Oliver's joy. It was an equitable deal, wasn't it? Yes, but you do want a baby too, don't you? Said Oliver. For yourself. Not just for me. Of course I do, said Erica. It had always been for him. Always. That acquisitive desire she'd felt for a little Holly or Ruby of her own was gone now. She wasn't sure exactly why. Probably because of what she'd overheard, and maybe because of something else. Murky feelings related to those lost moments from her memory. But none of that mattered. She ate her chicken curry and let her eyes roam around their beautiful, uncluttered room. What's that?
she said suddenly. She stood up and went to the bookshelf. There was a sparkle of blue in between the spines of two books. Oliver turned to watch her. Oh, he said as she pulled out Holly's little blue sequined bag. That. Erica opened the bag full of Holly's rocks. She must have left it here, she said, lifting out a small white polished pebble. The night of the barbecue, said Oliver. I'll give it back to Clementine, said Erica. Holly doesn't want it back, said Oliver. He opened his mouth as if he were about to say something else, but then he changed his mind and instead took a sip of water and replaced the glass carefully on the coaster. Really? I thought she loved... We might be pregnant by Christmas, said Oliver dreamily. Imagine that. Imagine that, agreed Erica. And she dropped the stone back into the bag. Chapter 60, The Day of the Barbecue. Is Ruby dead? Asked Holly, playing with the handle of her little blue sequined handbag full of rocks, which she held with both hands on her lap. No, said Erica, she's not dead. She went in the helicopter with your daddy to the hospital. She'll be there by now and the doctors will make her better. They were sitting under a duvet on the couch while Oliver made them hot chocolate. Madagascar was on TV. Erica had taken out her contact lenses, so all she could see were flashes of colour on the television. She had a feeling of impending sleep, like a huge black wave about to crash over her. Except she couldn't fall asleep, not while Holly was here. And it was only, what, around 6 or 7 p.m. It felt much later. It felt like the middle of the night. She might die. Holly stared at the television. I don't think she will, but she's very sick. It's very serious. Yes, she might. Erica, said Oliver as he walked into the room carrying the tray with the hot chocolates. What? Weren't you meant to be as truthful as possible with children? No one knew how long Ruby had been submerged before they'd pulled her out. There were no guarantees. She could have significant brain damage, hypothermia. She might not make it through the night. Why did Erica feel as if she should know exactly how long Ruby had been under the water for? Why did she feel strangely responsible, as if she'd failed in some way? She'd got to Ruby first. She'd been the first one to act. She wasn't Ruby's parent. But there was something she'd done or not done. There you go, said Oliver. He was still in his wet clothes. He'd get sick. He handed Holly the mug of hot chocolate. I didn't make it too hot, but just take a little sip in case, okay? Thank you, said Holly loudly. Good manners, Holly, said Oliver. Get changed, said Erica as she took the hot chocolate from him. You'll catch a cold. Are you okay? Asked Oliver. Why? Do I not look okay? She took a sip of her hot chocolate and somehow missed her mouth. She wiped her finger across her chin. No, said Oliver, you don't. Manners, said Holly to Erica. What are you talking about? Snapped Erica. The child wasn't making sense. It occurred to her that she'd just snapped at Holly in exactly the same way that Sylvia used to do when Erica was a child. The moment Erica started telling her mother something, she would snap, What are you talking about? And Erica would think, Let me finish, and then you'll know what I'm talking about. You forgot to say thank you, said Holly.
She looked frightened.
To Oliver!
Oh, said Erica, of course, you're right. I'm sorry, Holly. I didn't mean to snap at you.
Erica watched two giant teardrops quiver on the bottom eyelashes of Holly's big blue eyes. It was more than just her snapping. Holly wasn't that sensitive.
Holly, she said.
Holly, sweetie, it's fine. Everything is fine. Give me a cuddle. There. Although, I actually think I might. Oh, I'm sorry. She couldn't hold on. Holly needed her comfort right now, but she couldn't give it to her. She handed back the cup to Oliver, and he reached out with surprise to take it just in time before it slipped from her hands.
I'm just so sleepy.
She let that big black pool of nothingness take her, drag her under. She could hear a phone ringing, but it was too late. She couldn't get back now. It was much too big and powerful to resist. Oliver looked at his comatose wife with a dull, sick sense of recognition. She'd passed out, drunk. It meant she'd effectively left. Gone. Not back until the morning. He'd never ever looked at his wife with dislike before, but as he studied her drooping head and gaping mouth, he felt his face distort with resentment. They didn't even know yet if Ruby was going to be okay. How could she sleep? But, of course, drunks could always sleep. She's not a drunk, he reminded himself. She's just drunk. For the first time since you've known her.
She must be exhausted, said Holly, looking at Erica with fascination.
Oliver smiled at Holly's use of the word exhausted. I think you're right, he said. She's exhausted. How's your drink? Not too hot?
No, it's not too hot, said Holly.
She took a very careful, tentative sip. There was a little moustache of milk on her upper lip.
Oliver, said Holly quietly.
She held up her little blue handbag, and her eyes filled with more tears. Did you want me to put that somewhere safe? Oliver held out his hand.
Oliver,
she said again, but much more quietly this time. What is it, darling? Oliver crouched down in front of her. His clothes were still wet and filthy from the fountain. Holly leaned forward and began to whisper urgently in his ear. Chapter 61. The Day of the Barbecue. The four grandparents arrived at the hospital at the same time. Clementine had come out of the ICU to make a quick phone call to Erica to update her on Ruby's progress and to make sure that Holly could stay with them for a little longer until they sorted out where she would spend the night. To her surprise, Oliver had answered Erica's phone. Holly was fine, he said. She was on the couch under a blanket with Erica watching a DVD. He said that Erica was asleep, and he sounded embarrassed about that or bewildered, but apart from that, he spoke exactly as Oliver always did, with polite, throat-clearing reticence, as if it had been an ordinary night, as if he and Erica hadn't just saved Ruby's life. From where Clementine stood on the first floor landing, she could see the ground floor of the hospital and the sliding doors at the entrance. She recognized Sam's parents first as they hurried in, their agitation clear in the way they half ran, half walked. They would have been caught in the same traffic jam as she and Tiffany had, and they would have felt that same demented frustration. Sam's dad had grown up in the country and abhorred traffic lights. She watched as the four of them grabbed at each other, like the survivors of a natural disaster running into each other at a refugee camp. Her father, dressed in his around-the-house clothes, jeans and a misshapen jumper that would never normally be seen in public, hugged Sam's tiny mother, and she put her arms up and clung to his back in a way that was almost frightening to see because it was so out of character. Clementine saw Sam's dad put his hand on Clementine's mother's arm, and they both turned around, their faces lifted, studying the hospital signs for clues about where to go. Clementine's mother caught sight of Clementine first, and she pointed at the same time as Clementine raised her hand, and then they all hurried up the long, wide walkway toward her. Clementine walked down to meet them halfway. Her mother was first, followed by Sam's parents, with her dad at the back. He'd had a knee operation after a skiing accident a few months back. The expressions on their faces were painful to see. They each looked terrified and sick, and as if they were laboring to breathe, as if the walkway were a mountain Clementine had forced them to climb. These were four fit, trim grandparents enjoying their retirement, but now they appeared much older. For the first time, they looked elderly. Ruby and Holly were the only grandchildren on both sides of the family. They were adored and spoiled, and Sam and Clementine lapped up the adoration with such casual vanity, for hadn't they created these exquisite little angels? Why, yes, they had. So they deserved their pick of free babysitters, and they deserved to sit back and be fed homemade treats when they went to visit. For look what they offered in return, these glorious grandchildren. "She's okay," she said. By okay, she meant alive. She wanted them to know that Ruby was still alive. But she spoke too soon, before they could properly hear, and she could see all four of them straining to understand, in a panic to get to her faster. And Sam's mother grabbed for the banister as if it were bad news. "Ruby is okay," she called again, louder. And then they were all around her, asking questions, creating a roadblock for people trying to get up the walkway. They